Shecky Green. That's Tuesday.
A Fugitive. A QM production, starring David Jansen as the Fugitive. Also starring Barry Morse as Lieutenant Gerard.
All right, and we are off and running. In fact, we're off and running a little bit more unexpectedly than I thought it was going to be. Hi, everybody. Hopefully we're back with you once again, talking Fugitive with Kitty and Bobby and Ken. And tonight we're going to be discussing the worst of the best from season three. So I think the things have been delayed long enough, so let's get right into it, and we'll start our discussion as usual with Bobby Neer.
Thank you, Dave. Wings of an Angel, Trial by Fire, Landscape with Running Figures, Running Scared, Ill Wind, Wife Killer, and the 2130. All titles that longtime Fugitive fans know as the very best, not only of season three, but perhaps of the entire series. We have discussed them all at length over the past year. But that's all behind us now. Tonight, we look, as we have in other seasons, at the dark side, the very worst of season three. And each of us has picked out the one episode that made us cringe the most. In the second half of this program, if we have the time, we will also point out some dishonorable mention episodes. Additionally, we have two emails from listeners to get into. So we have an overflowing agenda, which means I will dispense with my usual long-winded intro and get right into the heart of the matter with Kitty and her pick for perhaps the worst episode of the entire series, a dreadful attempt by the producers of The Fugitive to take on a deadly serious topic, only they forgot it's the mid-60s and the prevailing attitude at that time was a lot different than it is now. Kitty, just what is going on in the middle of the heat wave that makes it so awful to watch?
Well, I would say that not only is it the worst episode of the series, but it might be, I would definitely put it up there as one of the worst 60 minutes in the history of television. They decided to do this controversial subject of rape, or in this case, it ended up being like an acquaintance rape, and it's awful. It's just plain terrible. We have an episode that starts off where Kimball is breaking up with a woman, played by Carol Rosen. She's drunk. She gets mad at him because he's broken up with her. She gets into a car and drives off in her inebriated state. The next thing we know, it's the next morning, and everybody's wondering what happened to Laurel. And so everybody's running all over the place looking for her. They finally find her. She's sort of out in the woods. And yet when they find her, we're not really sure what to make of it because she's lying there, quite frankly, looking like Snow White. I mean, she's lying there on the ground. She's asleep. I think her hands might even be folded across her stomach. Her dress doesn't even look the slightest bit trussled. Every hair is in place. Her makeup is not smeared. She ends up going to the hospital. The doctor comes out and says, well, she suffered some bruises and contusions. And the police officer says, is that all? And he says, oh, if it were only that. Apparently, you couldn't even say the word rape on television back then because they couldn't say it. Nobody ever says the word. And my personal feeling is that, first of all, if you can't even say the word in the program, then you have no business doing it, the program in the first place. And second of all, she doesn't even look like a rape victim. Like I said, her bruises and her contusions wear. I mean, she's wearing blouses that clearly show her neck and her arms. I mean, where are these bruises and contusions? She won't tell anyone who did this diabolical deed to her. So everybody automatically is assuming Kimball did it because she's saying she doesn't know who did it. She can't remember who did it. And all of the while, you know, Kimball just wants to leave town. We find out eventually, I mean, she goes home. She's been living with her sister and her brother-in-law. She goes home. We finally find out that It wasn't some guy she picked up on the side of the road, but somehow her brother-in-law ended up in the car with her the night before, and it was her brother-in-law that did this dastardly deed. He's feeling incredibly guilty. He tells his wife what he did to his sister, and what's the wife's reaction? Is she mad that he did this horrible thing to her sister? Does she want to kill him? Does she say, I never want to speak to you again, you despicable piece of slime? How could you do that to my sister? No. She says, you keep your mouth shut. I don't want to deal with a scandal. Apparently, raping one's sister is a very easy crime to forgive. So, to make a long story short, eventually it all comes out in the end. The guy confesses that he did it. Kimball escapes. And in the end, Laurel comes walking out and she says that the whole thing was her fault. And so she says that that's what she'll say in court so that her brother-in-law basically is off the hook. And my question would be, honey, you're living with your brother-in-law and your sister. Aren't you just the slightest bit worried the next time you go in to take a shower and your sister just happens to not be at home? I mean, this is just so unrealistic and so horrendous. And I mean, you know, I can't, my heart goes out to any rape victim who was watching the show that night, because they were probably thinking, you know, it's because of TV shows like this that maybe they're thinking nobody took me seriously in a court of law. You know, they could have used this if they wanted to tackle a controversial subject like this, it's like, how about actually basing it on reality of what this horrible, ugly thing is, and try to educate a few people. You know, if you're just going to take the easy way out, then don't do it. I mean, Quinn Martin should have thrown that script into the paper shredder as awful as it was.
Kitty, look at it this way. Things do improve, and you couldn't even get a show like that on TV today. Sometimes I think TV is too politically correct these days, but when you consider that episode, maybe it's not too politically correct. Okay, we have to move on. Ken has his choice as well. When the Wind Blows, a strange story more suited to the Twilight Zone than The Fugitive, about a little boy named, wouldn't you know it, Kenny, who is the very definition of the word dysfunctional, if that is. You think there is something odd about a child who spends all his time inside a cave collecting dead things. Ken, who should know this, since in real life, along with his wife, of course, very successfully raised three sons of his own, should be an expert on this. So let's find out. Ken, what's with this kid anyway, and can he possibly be helped?
I was thinking about this episode today, and I just had to cringe even more just talking about it. Would you believe that episode 75, When the Wind Blows, aired in, the year would have been 1966, right?
I believe so, yeah.
And it comes on at 10 o'clock in the evening,
yeah.
So it's an adult show.
Right.
So if you're a Fugitive fan and you've gone through the first 2.5 seasons and you've seen some classics, and all of a sudden you stay up 10 o'clock on Tuesday evening to tune in, what kind of an episode do the producers and writers produce and spend maybe, what, $500,000 to put it all together? A story about a kid who is dysfunctional and a nutty mother who does not know how to handle the kid, and also a cop who has nothing else to do in his town but sit in a cafe waiting for a newspaper so he can identify Kimball and maybe become a macho cop to bring in Kimball. So I call this episode The Three Stooges. Kenny is stooge number one, the mother is stooge number two, and the cop is stooge number three. Now Kimball, he's just a bystander here, and he acts completely buffoonish, if you know what that word means, a buffoon. Just stand there and just kind of go along with everything that's going on. You know, we have the opening scene where he needs a job. He meets the mother who's fixing up some cabins. So she hires him right on the spot, and she's alone. And then the kid, kind of playing around a little bit, he needs a birdhouse. So Kimball builds the birdhouse, and that's how these two get to know each other. But the nutty mother is concerned about her little boy because he's not normal. You know, he goes to school, he doesn't get along with others, and he hides in a cave and won't let the mother come into the cave. So what mother would let a little boy play in a cave? So that's question number one I had when I was watching it. Eventually, Kimball's invited into the cave, and the boy, and Kimball sees all these little dead, got some stuffed animals, and some other little toys, and they're all just kind of piled up, some garbage in there. And Kimball goes, "What's going on?" The boy said, "These are my dead things. You know, once you can't use them anymore, they're just dead." And Kimball comes up with a brilliant answer. "You know what? That sounds logical. If you can't play with them, they're dead." So he kind of comforts the boy a little bit. Meanwhile, the cop, you know, he's waiting in the diner, hoping he can get a picture of Kimball in the newspaper and then bring him in. And the mother, she doesn't know what's going on. So, I mean, is this a kid's story? What's going on? Am I watching The Fugitive, or am I watching a bizarre episode about a kid in the cave with Kimball and the mother? Anyway, the story plays out. The mother eventually gets into the cave and sees the dead thing. And Kimball invites her into the cave. It's very brilliant, you know. You know, there's a movie called Cape Fear. You know, this mother, she should have realized that. She knew that Kimball was an escaped fugitive, yet she got into a dark cave with Richard Kimball. Pretty smart. Anyway, the cop, he's trying to track down Kimball. And in the end, the boy wants to run away with Kimball, hops onto the truck. And Kimball eventually finds the boy and sends him back to his mother. And the boy kind of maybe turns around a little bit.
Ken, why don't you repeat what you said in your review, what you would have done with this kid?
I would have taken his head, screwed it around a couple times, and say, "Hey, kid, let's go play some ball. Let's play a game of chess. Hey, there's some kids in the neighborhood. Maybe play some cards. Do something that they did in the 60s. But for this kid to just kind of hang out in the cave and look at his little dead thing. I know Kimball is supposed to be a doctor helping kids, and maybe the point of the producers was to show that Kimball is sympathetic with kids. But what's going on? This is an adult show. It's on at 10 o'clock. All the kids are in bed. What is the point of this episode?" Completely baffled, and I just had to give it a 1 rating only because they used the word Ken for the kid's name.
Oh, well, that seems fair. Well, yeah, and both of those episodes, both Heat Wave and the one about Kenny, are typical of the kind of thinking in the 60s. See, you've got to keep that in mind. I don't think either one of those stories would see the light of day on TV today because, well, obviously the first one is so politically incorrect it's preposterous. And the second one is just ridiculous. I mean, I don't think any, in the 40 years or so since that aired, they've come up with new ways to treat dysfunctional children that don't involve simply letting them sit by themselves in a cave. So it does seem absolutely absurd.
All right, we're gonna take a quick time out. The one thing that I'm having trouble figuring out here is Kitty and Ken, did you like those episodes or not? All right, we're just having a bit of fun. We're going to take a quick time out. We'll come back right after this to talk about more of the worst of the best Talking Fugitive here on Sharavision Radio.
Tuesday evenings just keep getting better on KSAV. At 7:30 p.m. Pacific, 10:30 Eastern, every other week, Audio Entertainment Group will bring you Dave White Presents, an interesting, fun, and fast-paced presentation of variety entertainment. Musicians, writers, comedians, and more perform and are interviewed in a format that is predictably unpredictable. Hear it first on KSAV and later at audioentertainment.org. KSAV keeps changing for the better.
All right, talking fugitive back at this. It was really a brief timeout. Let's continue on here because there's an awful lot of the worst of the best from season three. So to pick up where we left off, let's go back to Mr. Moderator himself, Bobby Neer.
With the 21:30, an all-time classic, just four episodes from the end of season three, you would think the series would be perfectly set up for a rousing final four seasons, to say nothing of creating a memorable multiple-episode end to the series after David Janssen told them he wanted out. If only that had been true. Season 4 turns out to be a bomb so big that the then Soviet Union actually complained at the UN that we were testing nuclear weapons above ground. And we will discuss that at length on a future show just about a month from now. However, there is at least one episode that was bearable, at least to some of us. The Ivy Maze turns out to at least be watchable, if not entirely believable. But wait, normally the three of us are all pretty much together on this program, until now. Kitty rated it an 8. I rated it a 6 after downgrading it from a 7.5. Most people liked it, but Ken gave it a big fat 0. Was it just a bad day for Ken or for the series? Find out as we enter with great trepidation the Season 4 Zone and the Ivy Maze 2 weeks from tonight on Talking Fugitive. Now, as for me, the worst of Season 3 comes down to an idiotic, wretched little tale about Kimball's reunion with an old college professor who has gone off the deep end in his old age with his ranting about pollution, or smog as it was called back then. It's called Not With a Whimper. The professor decides to teach everyone a lesson by having Kimball unwittingly plant a bomb in a local smog-producing factory. How this will teach anyone a lesson when the bomb itself will produce even more pollution is a mystery to me. Anyway, as luck would have it, after Kimball plants the package, he finds out that, wouldn't you know it, a group of small school children are taking a tour of the place on that very day, and now he's got to go back and defuse it. This is where the character of MacGyver was invented decades before he even appeared on TV. Kimball goes back to get the bomb and conveniently finds some sort of vat of an oily substance, and he plunges the bomb package into it. Never mind that it might have been exactly what was needed to set off the bomb. Now the cops know who Kimball is and have surrounded the place. So Kimball has to construct out of a few lab tubes and wiring a fake bomb, which he uses to casually walk right out of the building and escape right in front of the cops. And by the way, the main cop is played by an old actor named Jack Dodson. Fans of the old Andy Griffith show may recognize him from the last few seasons of that series, where he played County Clerk Howard Spray. He was a jerk there, and he's even a bigger moron here. Kimball escapes easily. Oh, don't even ask why the cop tells everyone out loud yet that the bomb is a fake and Kimball is getting away. Don't even ask why nobody follows him and his fake hostage from afar. Don't even ask why there is no police helicopter. Don't even ask why the main cop doesn't phone ahead to have them picked up down the road at any number of roadblocks set up earlier. Don't even ask why anyone would believe that Kimball would set off a bomb that he himself is holding in his hands, thereby instantly killing himself. Don't ask, don't tell, and most of all, don't watch this moronic and idiotic story. In fourth place, right behind these, is another one we all gave a 0 to, The Chinese Sunset, an absurd recreation of Pygmalion or My Fair Lady minus the music, in which a mafia hood's girlfriend takes a shining to Kimball while he tries to teach her some social graces. You can hear the moaning around the world. We all gave it a 0 rating. But not everyone feels that way. about that story or even about heat waves. And Kitty has two emails to read from listeners who disagree. Kitty?
Yeah, thanks. And I just would like to say, too, about the Chinese sunset. That is the very first episode I gave a zero to.
That's true.
I said if I wanted to watch Pygmalion, I could watch My Fair Lady, and
at least
I'd get some good songs out of
That's
it.
True.
But this is from Phil. He says, you are correct in naming Middle of the Heat Wave, Shadow of the Swan, which is a very bad telling tale of Fatal Attraction, and The Chinese Sunset is poor episodes. However, of all three, and although I gave The Chinese Sunset a 1 rating, I liked it the best. I think it had a lot of unexplored potential. There was a bit of an Eliza Doolittle quality to it, and the cast of characters living in the motel were interesting. I realize you can't have the audience continually on and up like in Search in the Windy City or Wife Killer, but with an episode like Chinese Sunset, you could have had some fun with this episode, maybe make it a bit lighter, let Kimball relax a little bit, but it wasn't done very well. And then, let's see, from David, he says, I recently saw your email on the topic for this night's Talking Fugitive and thought I would add comments. How could you forget the Season 3 episode, Not Without a Whimper, in the voting for individual episodes, as the lowest average by a large margin over the next lowest episode, Chinese Sunset? I find Not With a Whimper to be unwatchable, the plot illogical, the acting dismal, and in my opinion, it is the worst episode of all four seasons. Lawrence Naismith was a guest star in 3 episodes, and they are all dismal. And the voting for Season 3 episode Set Fire to a Straw Man also ranked lower than Middle of a Heat Wave or Shadow of a Swan. I called that one Set Fire to a Straw Script. Another Season 3 episode I particularly disliked was With Strings Attached, an episode I gave a zero in the voting. However, other viewers seem to have found something to like in this episode. My personal vote for worst episodes of Season 3 would be Worst Not With a Whimper, Second Worst With Strings Attached, Third Worst Shadow of a Swan, Fourth Worst Conspiracy of Silence. Although they were no more than average episodes, I found something to like about Middle of a Heat Wave and The Chinese Sunset. Middle of a Heat Wave had some good acting from Carol Rosen and J.D. Cannon. Chinese Sunset showed Richard's compassion for someone less educated than himself. It seems that individual viewers often defer on which are the poorest episodes. An episode that one viewer detests often has something that appeals to another fan of the series. However, Not With a Whimper seems to be unanimously disliked.
All right. Well, I agree with that. I mean, it's hard to believe, though, that anybody would find anything favorable to say about Heatwave. But while we have time, let's touch on Shadow of the Swan. I really don't remember a whole lot about that episode, something about a terribly dysfunctional woman who was another Kimball girlfriend. What I do remember about it is the end of it where I believe, Kitty, correct me if I'm wrong, does she struggle with her uncle? Is it her uncle?
Yes, he's a retired policeman.
He wants to arrest Kimball because he finds out who he is.
Yeah, and then...
And the gun goes off.
Yeah, the gun goes off. She falls into the water.
Right.
Kimball pulls her out.
Right, they pull her out. She's on the bank there of this little lake.
Yeah,
as he has done too many times in the past.
Yeah, absolutely nothing.
It is absolutely appalling that Kimball simply stands there and simply stands at her, and it seems like 3 hours go by. Now, we've seen this in other episodes, and I got to tell you, this is one thing in this series that irks me to no end. It is simply ridiculous. And one of the reasons might be that, unlike a lot of series today on TV, they didn't have any real doctor on the set to tell them when they were doing anything wrong. Today, on the doctor shows and almost anything that involves any kind of medicine, they actually have an advisor on the set to tell them what to do, how a doctor acts, and what gets done. It wasn't just MASH that did that. It was a lot of series. Back then, they did nothing of the kind because they really weren't interested in showing Kimball doing anything good. He either was amazing, the way he saved Amy in the beginning, and
or
an absolute...
Or how about in Season 1 when he did that C-section out in the woods?
Yeah, but then there's the other episodes where he does nothing, and you can't do that. Everybody knows that a doctor is supposed to make a heroic effort to save a person, no matter how incredibly hopeless it looks. and to just stand there and look at her and say, yeah, I think she's drowning, is absolutely incredible. And that just, it's almost hard to talk about it. Now, before we run out of time, I'd like to hear from both of you. We'll start with Ken about Chinese Sunset. You loved that one, didn't you, Ken?
Chinese Sunset. I'm trying to remember. I've got my book here.
That was with the dippy woman who was like My Fair Lady.
Yeah, she was. They were there at the hotel called the Chinese Sunset.
Right, you gave her zero.
Working there, and she wanted Kimball to teach her things about social graces and stuff like that. And it was just a stupid episode because at the end she was still the mobster's girlfriend. I mean,
yeah.
From my perspective, she really hadn't learned anything. And you know, when it came to voting, I ranked Middle of a Heat Wave and Chinese Sunset as the two absolute worst of season three, because Chinese Sunset was truly a pointless episode, and Middle of a Heat Wave was just disgusting as far as I was concerned.
Yeah, I was upset with the Heat Wave episode because of Carol Ross, and because she had such a good performance in May God Have Mercy in season two, and then when they brought her back, that really upset me. Not with a whimper. They used Lee Merriweather, remember?
Sure.
Yeah, a really good actress.
Oh,
she deserved a much better script than that.
Wasn't she the Catwoman in the Batman series?
Yeah.
Remember?
Well, no, she was the Catwoman when they did the movie, The Batman.
Oh,
it was Julie Newmar who played her.
She was also Miss America one time.
Yeah. She was known also for being on the Time Tunnel back in the 60s.
I remember her, yeah, but I wanted to give honorable mention also to all the scared rabbits.
Yeah, that's pretty awful.
And Bichette. That was awful. And another one, hey, we can't forget Coral Lee, the last episode of season three.
Oh, yeah.
But you liked the woman in there.
I liked the girl, but the whole story was awful.
Yeah, it was, especially looking. Wasn't there a scene there where Kimball was actually standing there in a diving suit?
Yeah.
Right, he's done everything. He's a doctor who can do everything in the world. He can also dive, too. You know, as the series went on, they simply completely lost their minds, and after a while, you begin to talk yourself into sheer idiocy that the man can just do just about anything. Of course, he can do anything, except he can't be a doctor, and that's what's so absolutely absurd. So season three has all those classic episodes.
Yeah.
I mean, there are seven true, absolute all-time classics in that season. That's 7 out of 30. But somehow they can't stand success, and they've always got to mix in there these other ridiculous stories. And by the way, David is right about Lawrence Naismith. He was in it three times, and all the stories were horrible.
Yeah, they are.
It was
this
one,
one and it was the one with the lion tamer, and I forget the other one.
The one that's at the end of season
one. Oh, we haven't done it yet. You're right, at the end of the series. Right, the last one.
A hermit.
Yeah.
Right. The last one.
And they did some kid shows, too. In a Plain Paper Wrapper.
Yep.
Talking about the guns and the
kids. That's right.
Made no sense to me at all. No sense.
Well, every time you get away from the original story of the series, you get into trouble. It's about the man running for his life. And while you can't do that day after week after week after week, if you go too far afield of that, you're going to get in trouble. And there wasn't a single time that they did that they didn't pay for it.
In this third season, did they take and were like the good and the bad episodes interspersed? Did you hit a point where you went just one bad one?
Oh, there are times when there are like three or four in a row, that are bad.
So they were just kind of running out of ideas then?
Oh, well, yes, indeed. Wait till we get to season four. That's next time.
you've whetted my appetite for that.
Yeah. Yeah, it's the show after the next one. That's when we'll do that one.
All right, and that's it for this show.
Okay.
So, everybody, I hope that, whetted your appetite to go out and buy the complete collection of Season 3 and see of all of these terrific episodes. Anyway, we will be back, hopefully, in 2 weeks when we will once again talk more Fugitive with the moderators of the Fugitive Yahoo group. For Fugitive Views and Reviews. God, only 4 years and I've actually got it right now. We'll be back in a couple weeks. Thanks a lot, guys. See you then on Retro Radio.